Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sassano. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ETHHub weekly recap. On these episodes, we discuss the ETHHub weekly newsletter, which covers news from the Ethereum ecosystem and crypto space as a whole. This week, we're covering the news from April 8th to April 14th, 2019. Hey, Anthony, you want to walk us through the news?
Hey, Eric, sure. So just a couple of things before we get into the news this week. You became a moderator of our Ethereum. Congratulations. Did you want to walk through how that experience was like and what led you to being a moderator there?
Yeah, for sure. I actually had no idea that I was even being considered or nominated until I guess it would have been Friday at this point, which is kind of about the time people realized it as well. So I guess the current moderators, someone had nominated me and they walked through and, you know, said, hey, do you want to be a moderator? And of course, I said yes. You know, there's been kind of, I don't know if I want to say controversy, but just kind of talking about like what makes up an Ethereum mod and kind of looking over who are the current mods of that subreddit these days. Over the last 4 weeks or so, I guess about 4 weeks ago, they put out some initial guidelines to what they thought should be a moderator on that Reddit, kind of after the whole drama with the Afri situation and everything. So, you know, I'm very honored that I was considered to be one, and I of course accepted that. I think there's going to be some more kind of announcements coming out from the moderator team. You know, there's a lot kind of like conspiracies from people around like why aren't the moderators answering everything. I mean, the reality is, if you look at the moderator list, everyone's pretty busy in their own individual lives, building things for Ethereum and personal lives. It's not like, I don't think anybody's being ignored from the community. From what I see, the current moderators are all about just making sure this community continues to flourish. And someone noticed I got added and posted a message on Reddit about it. And I responded to it and just kind of laid out, you know, my history if people didn't know me. And, you know, the end of the day, I'm not here. I definitely would kind of have a censorship off take to that Reddit. And I just hope I'm there to help the community continue to flourish, which in my opinion is the Ethereum community is the best community I've personally ever been a part of. So I'm excited to help that continue to happen.
Yeah, it's really awesome. I can't think of anyone else that would be a better fit than you, to be honest, since, you know, we run ETHHub together. So it's a perfect fit as it's like a more of a community role than anything else. And I know that you'll take it very seriously. So yeah, it was great to see that happen. And moving on, I wanted to talk about my EdCon experience. So I'm back, obviously, in Melbourne. EdCon was in Sydney. It was amazing, honestly. The event was pretty well put together. It was a nice venue. I got to meet so many people that I knew from Twitter. It was really cool. It was funny, actually. The first day, the Thursday, I didn't wear the hat that I've got on in my Twitter profile picture, and many people didn't recognize me, especially because I had lost a lot of weight since I took that, since my Twitter profile picture as well. And yeah, so on the Friday, I put the hat on and suddenly everyone started recognizing me, which is quite funny. But yeah, it was just a great conference. It was my first Ethereum conference, so it was great to meet all the people that I talk to basically all the time and to experience what a kind of Ethereum conference is like. I also got to sit on the kind of controversial issues in Ethereum panel that was emceed by Vitalik, and there was a few core people from the Ethereum community on that panel as well. It was less controversial than I think people expected it to be. It was just Vitalik rattling off a bunch of questions to each of the people on stage, asking about issues such as like, should Ethereum have a hard cap? What the effect of state rent is going to be and kind of things like that. I'll definitely share the recording of the talk once it's available. I'll share it via Twitter. But it was just awesome being on a panel, my first panel, of course, and I'm excited to be on more in the future. The next event that I'll be at, or that we'll both be at most likely, will be DevCon in November. I hear ramblings that it's going to be somewhere in Japan. Here's hoping, because I really want to go to Japan, so it'd be awesome to make a kind of holiday out of it too. But yeah, so, it was awesome also meeting a lot of the people who listen to the weekly recap that we do. It was actually a lot more people than I thought I would meet there. Someone bought me a jug of beer And if they're listening now, they know who they are. as a thank you for the weekly recap, which is just awesome. So I came back, I think it was Friday night, I got back into Melbourne and I was on a high, basically just really hyped up about Ethereum and the community at large. So yeah, it was really great. But yeah, I'll post the video out of the panel, and I'm sure the rest of the videos of the rest of the panels will be up in due time, basically.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was very jealous of you. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, us both getting together in DEF CON and kind of meeting everybody, and especially the people that are passionate about ETHUB. And I know you brought some stickers to EdCon, which seemed to be a big hit. And I think we'll be even bringing even more swag to DEF CON. So everyone look out for that.
Yeah, for sure. I dropped stickers everywhere at the event. I gave them out to as many people as I could. If you didn't get one, we will have them up on like kind of an ETHUB store that we plan to launch, like a merch store that we plan to launch soon enough. But we'll also have plenty of free stickers at any events that we attend, such as DevCon. Will probably be the next one that we both attend anyway. Cool. So I'll move on to the news of the week now after my rambling there. So basically, it's just one big kind of news that I want to talk about this week was China once again banning like kind of Bitcoin and crypto mining. They announced this, I think it was the middle of the week or something, and crypto Twitter kind of like shrugged it off because we see this all the time, right? It's kind of a meme that China bans things like such as Bitcoin and mining in general. You know, they banned, I remember them banning Bitcoin. It was during the bull run in 2017, and it kind of like dipped the price a bit, but then, you know, it got shrugged off, and then I think the Korean volume spiked because of it. I think China was Chinese people were funneling money to Korea to do their trading anyway. So yeah, it's just an interesting thing to see that they always announce that they're going to ban these things and nothing ever really eventuates from them, especially with regards to mining, because I'm not sure what the politics are like in China specifically, but it seems to me that a lot of the miners, if they have to move, they'll just move to other provinces in China where there's friendlier regulation, or where they can actually kind of do the mining covertly. I know a lot of them are located next to power plants and dams and things like that to get cheaper electricity. And they actually tend to bring a lot of economic activity to the different provinces that they're located in. So I don't think we're going to be seeing any miners completely leave China, to be honest, or if this ban even goes into effect, basically.
Yeah, I mean, this literally is just a meme at this point. Like, the amount of times China has banned Bitcoin, like whether from mining or buying and selling or whatever it might be, I'm sure soon they're going to ban, you know, searching for it on Google and Facebook. Like, it's just outrageous. So it doesn't seem like, just like all the previous ones, I don't think we should take it too seriously. But, you know, it does kind of show if China really, really wanted to ban mining, right? Like, they probably could, because you could kind of see from the power grid, like who's using the most electricity for proof of work and stuff like that. Like, it does show a weakness in proof of work, in my opinion. And, you know, I obviously, personally, a big advocate for switching to proof of stake. This is kind of one of the reasons. Of course, you know, I'll just be honest, like, proof of stake has its own, you know, flaws too. I don't think proof of stake's as noticeable to like some kind of state-run operation as proof of work is. But of course, you know, on-ramps and off-ramps and all that stuff, as far as getting into crypto, can kind of make proof of stake a little trickier there. But, you know, you could technically just do cash straight into crypto and then stake, and it'd be very hard for someone to find you. But just in general, it does show, in my opinion, like, if a state-run operation really wanted to take down crypto at this stage, like, they probably could, and they definitely could on the proof-of-work side. They could also, you know, 51% attack pretty easily. But yeah, going back to China, I mean, this is literally, like, this is kind of bullish to me. It kind of seems like once we see a China ban, it's like, okay, let's have a mini dump, and then it's kind of time to pump the price a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I saw a bit of chatter on Twitter about that from people just memeing it, basically saying, oh, well, it's time for Bitcoin to pump again, which was quite funny to see. But yeah, I don't think anything major will come out of this, but we'll definitely keep an eye on it. So moving on to project updates, there was actually a couple of major updates this week from the bigger Ethereum projects. The first one I'll run through is 0x. So 0x basically put out the part 4, and I think this is the final part of their roadmap for 2019. This detailed the stake-based liquidity incentives for their token. So it's basically a new token model that the 0x team is proposing. The ZEIP for this is ZEIP-31. The proposal is to upgrade the ZeroX protocol with a new token economics. These economics at the most basic level are that the takers of an order will pay a small fee on each ZeroX trade. Market makers will receive a liquidity reward that is proportional to the protocol fees generated from their orders and from their stake of ZeroX tokens. And this is slotted for release in Q3 2019. Now, if that seems a little bit complex because I didn't do it justice reading off the update, you can go read the full blog post in the newsletter. But just think of the model as very similar to what Uniswap does with the incentivizing liquidity providers. I'm not sure if this is going to be the best path forward because it just seems like it's adding more friction for not for users, but for like kind of the market makers and the traders and things like that. Will they put up with this friction to earn these rewards? Maybe. It depends how much demand there is for the ZeroX token, of course. There's a lot of different mechanisms at play here. And obviously, we're going to see this play out when it goes live in Q3. But we've already seen relays fork off of ZeroX due to the token. And I'm wondering if this will happen again with more popular relays because they're not seeing the traffic that they expect to see once this update goes live, or the liquidity is just not there. But I do respect that the team is trying to find more uses for the ZeroX token. But I'd be lying if I didn't say I just feel like this is kind of shoehorning a use in for the token that might not need to be there, or that just will just add too much friction for the various parties.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. I mean, I guess I'm torn on this. On one end, I highly encourage decentralized exchanges to find ways to create liquidity. That seems like that's what ZeroX is doing here. On the other end, it definitely seems a bit of a shoehorn. I mean, for a while it was like, oh, the ZeroX token is just for governance, and now you're going to be able to use it to your staking, and it's going to get your rewards from the trading on the protocol, which is, I guess, great for people that already own ZeroX tokens. But I'm still not really sure, like, why do you really need the token, right? Like, Uniswap's accomplishing this without one. And I understand, like, the markets are completely different. I mean, if I think back to when we tried EtherX, like, 5 years ago, we were trying to find ways to do this maker-taker model through a token. When we first kind of launched that to the community, which was very young and new at that point, like, we got a lot of pushback because people just didn't want a token, right? I kind of think it would almost be better at this point for some of these projects to admit that their token was just used for fundraising. I don't really see any problem with that, right? And I know none of the projects want to come out and say that because there's a lot of, there's even some like legal issues around that and all that. But I guess trying to find better ways to use these tokens is fine. I agree with you. Like, I think the friction that's added is probably going to be not necessarily forked out, because I think ZeroX has a lot of momentum behind it, and it's got the name and it's got the network effects if they want it. But a competitor is probably going to come around that doesn't use a token that's still going to find ways to give its users, the market makers, money for being liquidity providers, right? Like, there's definitely ways to do this without having a token. I mean, exchanges have been doing this for years and they don't have tokens. So it would be very interesting to see how this plays out. But I guess, all in all, I'm excited for where ZeroX is going as far as with Starkware, like the Stark DEX and trying to scale their exchange and all that. That's the stuff I'm more excited about. The token economics behind it, I don't know, questionable at best.
It's funny that you mentioned kind of centralized exchanges having liquidity without a token. Binance is the kind of contrarian example of that, because they do have a token and they do everything they can to drive value to that token. You can buy the token and get discounted trading fees. You can use the token on Binance Launchpad. They buy and burn and all that sort of stuff. But in saying that, I think there is a big difference between the ZeroX token and BNB, simply because BNB to me is a centralized kind of, I wouldn't even call it a cryptocurrency. It's more like you've got a share in Binance, essentially. And the only reason why they can get away with that and not being labeled as a security or get away with skirting regulations is because they're based in I think it was Malta and a few other jurisdictions where the US doesn't have really much reach. So I don't think the ZeroX kind of team could do that for the ZeroX token, as they are a US-based team. But if they were able to, maybe that could drive a lot more value to the ZeroX token using similar models to Binance. But there are, of course, a lot of other things at play. It's very hard for decentralized exchanges to get liquidity, as you mentioned, because there's no scale, and we're seeing, StarkDex going to come live and kind of not solve the problem, but make it a little bit better than what it is today. So there's a lot more at play. Maybe this model would work better if we already had scale so that it wouldn't add that extra friction. But I'm sure the ZeroX team has thought through this a lot and see that this is the best path forward for the token and for the platform. And I am glad to see these projects experimenting with more ways to drive liquidity to the various platforms, because liquidity is the kind of number one issue right now with these DeFi apps. We see a kind of a long tail. We see obviously Maker being the biggest, and I think Uniswap and Dharma and Compound. And then we see a lot more that are kind of struggling. So there was actually an interesting blog post about this where it was saying that the protocols that kind of hone in on one particular kind of mechanism and use case seem to be getting all the liquidity. So the kind of, I wouldn't call them dumber protocols, but simpler ones, whereas the more complex ones that try to do a lot more aren't seeing the liquidity. I'll link the blog post in the newsletter anyway. You guys can go check it out. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but you'll see it. I'll say it's a recommended read anyway. So interesting to see this evolve. I'm looking forward to seeing it deployed in Q3, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I want to be clear, like, I'm all for them finding ways to use the token beyond governance. We all know my thoughts about token governance and on-chain governance. So, there's nothing wrong with these tokens having funded these teams and now kind of finding use cases, right? Like, I talked to Mo Dong from Seller last week on the podcast, and they have a lot of creative ideas around using a token for layer two, right? Like, finding ways to provide liquidity and for security on the network, kind of solving the watchtower problem. Like, there's a lot of experimentation going on around tokens, and I think this is going to go for years. So I want to be clear, like, I don't think tokens are useless. I think we need to find use cases beyond just governance. And I think even the ZeroX team would admit that, right? And it seems like they're starting to go down that path. So I'm definitely interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I don't think the governance aspect of the ZeroX token is going to lead to much accrual of value at all. So yeah, interesting to see them experiment. So on to the next big update of the week, Augur detailed version 2 of their protocol. So this has been a long time coming. It includes a lot of major updates, such as using DAI instead of ETH for the Augur markets. You can trade on the outcome of invalid markets. There's going to be inflation introduced to compensate the price oracles. And I think the biggest update is the use it or lose it forking mechanism. So this is very interesting because I actually saw that Augur was considering this a while back, and I was just thinking through how do we incentivize people to use their tokens more, especially for something like the governance tokens, for example. Obviously, we know that the MKR token is meant to be primarily used as a governance token. And they're seeing rather low, I guess, turnout in terms of the number of participants, not the token turnout. So there's maybe like, I don't know how many there are, but there's not many actual holders of the token as opposed to how many tokens each address holds. So, if you can incentivize these sorts of things with the use it or lose it mechanism, where if you don't actually vote or use the token in governance, you actually lose most, if not all of it. So it's kind of like a slashing mechanism if you think of how ETH 2.0 staking works. So yeah, this will be introduced in Augur version 2, which might be quite, I'm not going to say dangerous, but people might need to start thinking about why they're holding the REP token at the end of the day. Are they holding it purely for speculative purposes? Because if they are, then they really need to keep track of what's happening with the various forks on Augur. And if they don't actually use their rep, then they're going to lose it. And then, obviously they'll lose money. So yeah, interesting to see this mechanism put forward. I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I've been a huge fan of Augur since day one. Like, I'm very long-term bullish on the idea of prediction markets. I think it can enable a lot more than kind of people. If you're bearish on prediction markets right now, I think potentially being a little short-sighted of what can actually be built on them. I think eventually, like, Augur, Gnosis, all these prediction market smart contracts, there's going to be so much built on top of them. And, you know, we've seen a lot of stuff built already on top of Augur, more than I think any other protocol or like base layer smart contracts we've seen so far. Just kind of unlimited what you can build on top of smart contracts. And so I've been very excited to see what Augur does in V2. Adding DAI is a no-brainer. I don't think people want to lock up ETH. Like, even if you get into a market that only has a week left, like the settle period on the market can last weeks, so you're kind of, you know, you're very exposed to volatility. Like, no one wants to bet ETH on things. Like, if you're betting on the Super Bowl, you don't want to also have volatility risk involved, right? So adding DAI is huge. And then like you mentioned, well, also they're going to be adding a really updated UI, I've heard, and UX and UI, which will be very nice. And then, yeah, the use it or lose it forking mechanism, interesting. Like, for definitely people are still just, obviously, I would say probably 90% of rep holders are just speculating on rep. So I'm sure there's going to be some type of watchtower service put out. Either you kind of like trust them to upgrade if a fork happens for you, or at least at a minimum, you're notified if it's happened. So I think Augur's been live about a year now, maybe even over a year, or maybe about a year. And no fork has happened so far. So I guess you need 2.5% of rep to be staked and go against a market settlement for a fork to happen. So it hasn't happened yet, but yeah, I guess it's inevitable in the future. And I'm sure it'll be really interesting to see once the first fork happens. Like, this will be a really good indication of like how many private keys are lost. Like, I have a theory that, you know, 5-10% of all Ether is potentially lost. Just people that had it were in the presale and forgot their keys for their wallet, or have died and didn't have plans for their ETH. It'll kind of be an interesting experiment, because REP has been around for pretty much since the Genesis block. That was around when the ICO was. So we're going to get a decent indication, I think, once the first fork happens, of like how much crypto is actually lost out there.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that a fork hasn't happened yet. It's worth noting that these kind of forks, this mechanism, it should rarely happen, if ever. Which, you know, whether that's a blessing or a curse remains to be seen. It might be a curse because people might get lax about it, and, you know, might think, oh, it's never going to happen, who cares? And then one day it happens, and they're not around, or they're not paying attention, and they lose their rep. Basically, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who bought rep during 2017. That aren't in crypto anymore. I think that you had to, when Augur went live, you had to kind of transfer your tokens over. But since then, if anyone is bought and just not in crypto anymore or not paying attention, they might lose their rep simply because they're not paying attention. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I think over the long term, if this mechanism proves successful, it will align the incentives of rep holders with the system. But at the end of the day, as most crypto is currently speculation and probably will be speculation for a very long time, I'm not sure how many people will just, you know, default to a watchtower service, as you were saying, or actually use and pay attention to Augur themselves. I doubt there's going to be much to pay attention to themselves, especially because these forks rarely, if ever, happen. It's just going to be too much. I mean, people just, do they really care at the end of the day? You know, do they care, or do they care about trading rep? So yeah, it remains to be seen, basically. So next thing I want to talk about was one platform that launched this week called Flux. So this platform is going to allow the trading of derivatives for startups. So you can trade on things such as the startup milestones, funding, products, and even kind of things like scandals or drama within the project. And this is really cool because it uses a bunch of different Ethereum-based protocols. So, of course, it uses Ethereum. Then it uses Augur, it uses 0x, and it uses Maker. So it uses Augur as a decentralized oracle service for market resolution of the trading of the derivatives. It uses 0x protocol for the off-chain order books. It uses DAI, obviously, for stability. So yeah, this is really cool. I really like how it's showing the power of how all these protocols work together. And I really like how it's enabling new markets for something that traditionally hasn't been traded on, or that I haven't known that to be traded on. Or if it is, it's probably done obviously in a centralized way and completely regulated, so normal people like us don't get access to it. But yeah, so this platform, I don't know if it's live just yet, but it will be live sometime in the future. And it just kind of came out of nowhere, basically. Like, there's so many of these projects that seem to come out of nowhere and just marry all these different protocols together, and everyone goes into a frenzy and they're like, holy crap, what is this? Like, I remember when Uniswap launched, it came out of nowhere. It was based on a blog post from Vitalik from like 3 years ago, and then it became the darling of Ethereum. So, you know, maybe this becomes kind of another, I guess you could call darling or kind of, gem of Ethereum, if you will. I just checked. It's actually in private alpha at the moment, so you need an access code to get access to it, unfortunately. So, but yeah, hopefully it enters open beta soon and we can all test it out.
Yeah, this is really cool. I mean, this kind of goes with what I was just talking about with Augur. Like, there's so many things you can build on top of these smart contracts that are out there. So this one's doing Augur, 0x, and Maker, kind of a combination of everything. I think this is going to become a trend in 2019 and beyond. This idea is really neat, actually. Like, you can bet on startups. So it's kind of like you were getting into an ICO, but you don't have to actually go through an ICO process of like buying tokens and whatnot. You can just kind of speculate on the startup through markets, which that's something I've said a lot on here. Like, I personally never bought into any ICOs, just kind of personal belief or whatnot. But like, I would have actually liked to speculate on some of the startups through a market mechanism instead of actually like buying tokens that I potentially didn't believe in. This idea would let you do that, right? So it's just, you can do so many cool things with prediction markets and using those via trading mechanisms like 0x. We're going to see very, very cool things come about. And this, like you said, came out of nowhere. I admittedly haven't dove too deeply into it other than reading their Medium posts, but seems like it's a really cool idea. And I think kind of we've talked about it as we go through another bull run, like there's going to be a lot of new projects launching on Ethereum. And this is one of the, I don't know if we're going to see the same ICO boom, although I kind of have a hunch it might come back, and who knows, it might go harder than it did in the past. But things like this are going to let people speculate on projects if they don't want to like buy into their token or something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting that you kind of mentioned that you don't need to buy a token to speculate on these startups anymore, which is really cool. I'm interested to see how that plays out, though, because a lot of people treat these tokens for these projects as, I guess, a share of the project and kind of a traditional stock, which is obviously the wrong way to go about it, because these tokens aren't equity in these startups or companies most of the time. Sometimes they are, but then they're registered as securities and all that kind of jazz, and you know, they're not traded as freely. And kind of things like that. So yeah, I'm interested to see Flux evolve, and to see it when it's open to the public, to see how much liquidity it actually attracts, and how many people actually want to trade on these various things for startups. Because you know, this is just the broad kind of issue with I guess you could say Ethereum, but DeFi in general, is that their liquidity is still lacking for various different protocols. Some of them, as I said before, have a lot of liquidity, like Maker and Uniswap. Others, you know, like 0x, for example, unfortunately don't. But, you know, they're experimenting with new ways to drive liquidity, and it's just good to see the experimentation play out at the end of the day.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess there is. So what you said is very important. I think a lot of people treat tokens like traditional stocks and equity ownership, which, you know, I think there'll be a wave of kind of initial equity offerings instead of ICOs, which kind of give you a right to an actual company. I think we'll see a boom of that sometime in the future. But I guess there is a future where 0x isn't, like, their biggest use case might not be trading crypto, right? It might be trading markets like this and NFTs and stuff. And they're kind of starting to position themselves to do that. So that's definitely a unique way to kind of look at 0x into the future.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, moving on to on-chain activity now. So as of a couple of hours ago, we're actually recording this podcast a day earlier this time, but as of a couple of hours ago, the stability fee for Maker has been raised to 11.5% from 7.5%, which is a 4% raise. You know, we knew this was coming, obviously, because DAI was still not back at its peg. This is a very high, I guess, interest rate at this point. But I think I've spoken about on the podcast before how even a 100% stability fee wouldn't dissuade people if ETH was going up. You know, ETH only needs to go up a few percent in a week for it to be profitable still to take out a city, you know, to draw DAI at 100% stability fee. So yeah, there's not much movement yet. No one has really burnt any DAI yet. The supply is still flat on DAI. I will be keeping an eye on this and tweeting out if I see any big moves happen. I don't know if this is going to be enough. Maybe after a couple of weeks, if the ETH price hasn't moved, a lot of CDP owners will want to wipe some debt because they're accruing too much fees. But I don't know. There's been so much discussion about this over the past couple months and whether the stability fee is actually the right mechanism for this. And we've talked about it extensively, how, you know, multilateral DAI is coming, DAI savings rates coming. But at the end of the day, it's just supply demand. We need to find more sinks for DAI, more ways to get people to lock up DAI or to use DAI, just more demand in general, because that will offset the fact that there's too much supply. But it's definitely a interesting balance. It's a hard thing to balance. The Maker team is taking this very seriously. I read the notes and I listen to some of the governance calls. They are all on the same page about, I think, what needs to happen. And they're taking the community feedback very seriously as well. It's just that this stability fee lever is pretty much the only real lever they have to keep the peg stable. So yeah, interesting to see it play out. I will keep Twitter updated as to how this plays out during the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, you definitely have the best updates as far as CDPs and Maker go. So definitely look at Anthony's feed for that. I don't stay as much up to date to it. I guess it's just, yeah, being a central bank of sorts and risk management is harder than I guess people thought it was. I mean, one of the biggest problems that Maker has right now as far as this goes is, you know, we've talked about this countless times and you just brought it up, but people are using CDPs to speculate on Ether. So, you know, you're kind of in a very niche and extremely speculative market that isn't going to just react to interest rate changes, right? So all of a sudden we're up at 11.5%. The other very interesting caveat here is I think the top, I want to say the top 10 CDPs own like 40% of all the outstanding DAI. So, you know, especially if you have whales that are in deep positions, to them, that's still cheap collateral. And I haven't dove into, and maybe you have a bit. I know like 3228's up there and 5199 is the highest CDP, but haven't dove so much into like if they're sending the money to decentralized exchanges and stuff. I know 3228 is, but you're kind of now getting into a point where you're trying to manage future expectations of Ether. That's kind of how I see the stability fee at this point, because you're kind of going against traders. And there's a lot of intricacies with people that are long and shorting and how margin funding rates work. I'm not sure Maker wants to get into that game at this point. Like the reality of the situation is there's only 100 million. Well, we're very close. The ceiling is 100 million and DAI. I kind of feel like continuing to raise the fee, and this is just my personal opinion, is going to be more destructive in the long run than it is if they just let the peg stay at like 0.97, right? Like the people that are with DAI right now are clearly fine with the peg being down at 0.97. Is it that bad that the peg is 0.97 versus 1 if it stays stable? Arguable, right? Like I don't necessarily see that as a problem. You're still getting this collateral through a decentralized means that you might not be able to find at like a bank and something like that. Like there might be a reason that this is actually below a dollar, right? So I guess if I was kind of in a position to have a say here, I would exercise a little bit of caution to raise this further, because at a point it's almost going to become to outsiders that are kind of looking into CDPs, like no one, if it starts getting up to like credit card rates, like what's even the point of it almost to people, right?
Yeah, it's actually interesting you mentioned that it might kind of show people that this, you know, by raising the stability fee, it might scare people off basically. There is concerns about that. I there was a few concerns on the call when I was watching the replay and also on the subreddit basically. I do agree with those concerns, to be honest, and maybe, yeah, keeping the peg at, I think the lowest it went to was 0.94 or something, 0.94, but, you know, it tends to hover around 0.97, and then, of course, we've got the ceiling there still of 100 million DAI, so maybe we just keep the system as it is, and it seems to, I don't know whether the stability fee, you know, raising seems to keep the new peg at 0.97, or around that. I don't think so. I think it's more that's just like kind of an equilibrium that has been found, especially with all these other lending protocols that have been, you know, all the DeFi protocols in general that have been accepting DAI for borrowing and lending. There's a lot of this stuff going on. And you mentioned before that a lot of the DAI is tied up in you know, the biggest CDPs, and they are. I kind of watch these big CDPs. They all do the same thing. They draw DAI, they buy ETH, they put the ETH back into their CDP, and then they draw more DAI later. They're all doing the same thing. They're just going really long on ETH using DAI, and I don't think they give a shit about a higher stability fee from what I've seen, because a lot of them don't tend to wipe a lot of their debt. I know that 3228 was actually wiping a lot of their debt for a little while, but then they just drew more, bought more ETH, and went. They put the ETH back into their CDP. So yeah, it probably hurts the smaller CDP owners a lot more, because obviously the bigger CDP owners can eat the fees, and they make a lot more money if ETH goes up. Yeah, so definitely agree with you that the constant raising of the stability fee probably isn't the best way to go about it. I'm not sure when we'll see another raise, because the last raise was actually 23 days ago when it went to 7.5%. So it's been 23 days since. You know, maybe we'll see another 23 days or even longer, depending on how the peg goes, I guess. We did actually see the peg return to a dollar and actually go above it when ETH spiked up to whatever it was, $180 from $120. So it definitely is just a simple supply and demand mechanism here that needs to be kind of, you know, worked out. But yeah, when multilateral DAI and the DAI savings rate go live, I think this will be a lot easier to manage than it is now.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a way, like a lot of the higher CDPs are almost like pot committed, meaning like they have so many chips in that potentially just want to, like, I know 3228 is going to just ride or die, right? Like, he's not going to let, he's either going to pay off his debt at this point, or he's going to, like, through Ether going up, or he's just going to let it burn. Like, I feel like if you're opening up a CDP with that much money at this point, like you said, you probably really don't even care about the rate. You're pretty much going to just let it burn if it goes down. So, in that point, they might wait 1 or 2 or 3 years for Ether to go up to wait to actually close it out.
Yeah, 3228 is this kind of like wild card. You know, it's infamous within the community. Not sure if it's just one person or a team of people, but yeah, it's they've already been liquidated once for over 50,000 ETH, and you know, they got close again, and then, you know, they're still playing with fire. The liquidation price is only $145, and the ETH price is $168. You know, as we know, ETH can dump down to that in a heartbeat. So yeah, it's just funny watching 3228. But yeah, the other bigger CDPs are pretty safe. They've all got liquidation prices under $100. You know, the biggest CDP, 5199, is at $84. And then after that, they're even lower, 60, 50, 20, you know, $18. Like, you know, no one else plays with fire like 3228 does. So moving on from that, I did want to mention one thing. So this week, Dharma actually went live to the public, Dharma Lever, and because of that, they're seeing explosive growth for their borrowing and lending. And this is definitely because you can actually lend your DAI for 8% at the moment on Dharma, which is actually really cool, because that's a high percentage. I think Dharma's underwriting these, so they're obviously subsidizing this, so you can get that 8%. And then the borrow rate is actually quite low for DAI on Dharma. It's 4% to borrow it as well. So that's actually less than Maker, of course. So yeah, it's funny how all these different kind of DeFi apps are working together, and as we talked about last week, you can actually go on loanscan.io and see the table of different lending rates on both open and centralized finance. So like, I'm looking at it right now, and lending DAI on Dharma is definitely the best way to go about it. It's at 8%, it's paying even higher than the centralized finance platforms like Celsius and Poloniex and Bitfinex, and of course DAI is the top borrowed asset by a long shot, and with WETH or ETH being the second most borrowed asset. So yeah, it's fun to see this growth. Like, I'm just looking at it from April 6th to April, I guess today when we're recording it, which is the 14th or the 15th for me. You know, millions in volume running through Dharma. But yeah, I'm curious as to whether this is just because they're subsidizing these loans, or, you know, whether this 8% is going to stay there once they stop subsidizing it or underwriting it themselves. I doubt it, because I'm not sure how many people are going to pay 8% for, you know, when you lend them DAI. As they're paying 4% at the moment. So yeah, we'll see how this plays out.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're, I don't know the intricate details, but obviously they're subsidizing, right? Like the rates are flipped. Like there's no way that lending rates can be higher than borrowing rates. So it'll be interesting to see. I think their strategy is probably like go to market, and you know, they're kind of website and tool and user experience is amazing. I've checked Lever out and I'm a big fan of their team, but you know, I think I don't want people to get like too used to these rates, especially on the east side. I think they're probably subsidizing the Ether rate too, which right now, according to LoanScan, is 2.5% to loan out, whereas like on Compound, it's 0.1%. So I kind of put out a tweet the other day. I'm not too worried about staking rates right now because it seems like DeFi is kind of settling us into like 0.1 to 0.5% on the Ether side. You know, if you're getting 3% on your Ether on staking, like which is about where, you know, 8 to 10 million total stake will be, that's not that bad. I'll be interested to see the demand though for Dharma after this all plays out. I don't know what kind of their strategy is. I know they just did a raise, so maybe some of those funds are being put towards kind of onboarding customers, which is good, right? Like you want to get customers in and do a promotion. This happens all the time. Banks do it, you know, literally constantly. Like there's promotional rates to come in and bring your money in. And then after some time, it kind of drops off. So I'm assuming they're going to let the market kind of take it after it drops off, which to me right now would say on the DAI side, it's probably going to be closer. Compound 7% right now, so that's not too far off. But the lending side for ETH is probably going to drop down to like 0.1, and then the borrow side's got to go up. Right now on Dharma, it's 4%, and on the other solutions, it's between 11 and 14. So that'll definitely go up. But definitely, people go check it out, dharma.io, and their user experience is unique, and I kind of like their take to how they're going about DeFi. So definitely go check it out.
Yeah, as you said, this is just a kind of promotional thing from Dharma, and I'm actually glad that they're doing this because at least they're doing something to try and drive liquidity to these apps. I know the other teams, like we were talking about ZeroX before, are trying different mechanisms as well, but Dharma has, I guess, I don't know if it's a bonus or a positive thing that they don't actually have a token to worry about, so they don't have to worry about any of these token economics or things like that. They can just drive usage to their platform, which they have been doing. So yeah, let's see if this continues, basically. So the last thing I wanted to talk about, or I guess we wanted to talk about, was the kind of community update. So there's Istanbul Fork is scheduled for a few months from now, and there's going to be a kind of workshop in Berlin on April 17th and 18th to talk about both Istanbul and the ETH1X roadmap, kind of planning meeting, basically. So yeah, Eric, did you want to go through this one?
Yeah, definitely. So I think this was originally started by the Ethereum Magicians. So they're kind of, you know, they help shepherd the EIP process, which are improvements to go into the protocol. And we're going to have the Istanbul Fork coming up, I believe, around October or so. I should go check that date on ETH Hub because we have a page for Istanbul. But they're going to be a group of people are going to be, or really whoever can make it, is going to be meeting in Berlin on the 16th and 7 or the 17th and 18th of April. So in a couple of days here, and they're going to be walking through all the EIPs that are going to be considered for Istanbul. I guess I'll just give a shameless plug that one EIP 1559, which I'm currently actually working on formally writing an EIP for and putting it out there. Thankfully, with the help of Vitalik, I should be putting a pull request in for that tonight or tomorrow before the meetings. But everyone, whoever has kind of put their AIP out there is kind of championing for it, is going to be invited to talk about it. So if you're in person in Berlin, you can kind of talk about it and then there'll be open discussion about it. If you're remote, you're going to be able to present for it. So really cool. Like people are kind of, you know, there's a lot of debate around governance in the space right now, but I think the magicians are doing a good idea. Good work around kind of shepherding the EIP process and putting formality around it and making sure that there's deadlines and the fork, you know, is out in October, but we need to talk about these EIPs in April and we're going to get the groups together. And if you can't be there, you can present remotely. You know, it's just cool. Like this is by far the most formal, you know, I've seen, I think anybody has seen kind of an EIP and fork process come together. So there's a lot of cool topics on the agenda. They include ETH 1.x topics as well. So not just necessarily EIPs for Istanbul, but I know like on the agenda is like state fees and EWASM and pre-compiling and you know, then all the EIPs, which include like 1829, 615, 1057. I don't want to rail them all off, but, and then of course 1559, which is kind of the fee market change that I'm a big fan of. So, I think there's going to be a live stream. I should find that out for sure and I'll tweet it out if so, but, yeah, anyway, it's just cool to kind of see the community come together and have some formality around this process.
Yeah, because I was in EdCon and I had a wedding Saturday. I totally missed this. You know, it actually got posted back in March, but I think it's getting more relevant now, obviously, because it's happening in the 17th and 18th of April. But yeah, it's just, there's so much happening in Ethereum. It's so hard to keep up with. I mean, I guess that's why we started ETH Hub. But even for us, as you know, we do this kind of stuff on the side, it's very hard for us to keep up with this. But this is definitely something that I think everyone should tune into if they care about the future of kind of what's happening with Istanbul and ETH1.x, because it'll give you a nice rundown of the EIPs that are being considered a lot, and as well as a lot of the other things such as state rent fees, which is, I think, one of the biggest upgrades that Ethereum will basically integrate, especially with ETH 2.0. I actually don't think it's getting enough attention from the wider community, as it's going to be a breaking change for a lot of different dApps, because it will actually mean that dApps will have to start paying for using the state. And yeah, so definitely, I mean, I'm going to link this in the newsletter, of course. Definitely go check that out. And then hopefully I can tune into the live stream, but with me being so far into the future, living down in Melbourne, it's quite hard. But if you're in Berlin, I guess, I think you can go join as well. I'm not sure how many people that we have listening to the podcast are in Berlin, but yeah, definitely go check it out. So that's everything for this week. Thank you, everyone. So if you haven't subscribed to the newsletter yet, of course, go to ethhub.substack.com. Subscribing to the podcast is easy as well, podcast.ethhub.io. And we'll see you in the next one. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast. You can subscribe to us at podcast.ethhub.io, as well as follow us on Twitter at econoar and at zazzle0x.